Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, November the 24th, was rightly named for me. It began with one of the things I love best, walking the river. This morning, it was with Linda. The day was blue and gold. We went to the bridge that crosses the Pardinalis on Farm to Market Road 1320 and walked west toward the ranch. In late November, the day began chill, but warm to about 80 in midday. As always, I had a heightened sense of awareness of the world around me when I walked the river. An armadillo lumbered close by, and I saw that he had 9 distinct rings around him. Clarence said that was a species most distinctive of our hill country. Once we crossed the river dry-shod on a fault, a perfect slanted bridge of rocks pushed upward by some long-ago diastrophic movement. Once we walked on a cushion of soft, fern-like grass, a completely new growth for me, deep and springy underfoot. A cliff rose precipitously on the north side of the river, and out of it, in the sparsest cupful of soil, struggled a live oak tree, tough, hardy, conquering the tenaciousness of life, waves its flag at you. Once, shots rang out close by, deer hunters, which probably didn't add to Jerry's relaxed mood. Past cedar trees with blueberries as bright as Christmas ornaments. Clarence said they turn after frost. All my senses are more alert, eyes and ears and nose on these walks. But 2 hours passed and the sun was hot, and Linda needed to get into the ball game, and the going was rougher underfoot. So we were glad when we reached the pickup truck at the end of 5 miles. We bounced over the pasture and emerged at the Myers Ranch House. And there, how typical of the holiday, we met the city family come to spend Thanksgiving with Grandma. There was Father with a camera, his pretty little blonde daughter in a red hood, and a grinning little boy. We took pictures and then rode home. Linda and Lucy and Pat got off to the game. I worked a while, and then came a call from Lyndon. Would you like to meet me at the end of the runway? I dropped everything and was there in 5 minutes. He had Matilda and Arthur and her father and Daphne and the Bob Benjamins and their 2 children. 6 of us piled into the Thunderbird with him driving, 2 in a bucket seat in front. And we rode over the dance in Martin to the wide-eyed enjoyment of the Benjamins and then home for a hamburger lunch. It was 3:30 by the time I left with Chris and Tommy Taylor and Sally and Nancy. The Crims party had gone and Lyndon was at work. And I was going to do something I'd long wanted to do. See those dinosaur tracks on Melvin Winter's ranch. Melvin and Nita met us at the Diamond X. We piled into their ranch wagon and bounced over the Caliche Hills to the site of the tracks. It was a stream bed where for perhaps a block there was a flat, level expanse of rock that rippled slightly to show that it used to be the bottom of an inland sea. And crossing it were perhaps a dozen tracks, some 3 feet across. Or were they potholes? I could not say. At any rate, a geologist from the University of Texas had identified them as dinosaur tracks. And it was a marvelous sunny afternoon's adventure to imagine those great beasts lumbering through the swamp of millions of years ago, munching the tops of fern trees and leaving their footprints for us today. Along the stream bank rose a cliff some 15 or 20 feet high, which was a cross-section of sedimentary rock laid down over many centuries, and in it, quite visible, were fossils. It was just like going to a store and looking on the shelves and picking out the can you wanted. Only you had to take a pick and loosen them and dig them out. Shells and marine life of all sorts. How impatient I was that I didn't know the names or how many hundreds or thousands of millions of years ago these creatures might have populated this area. Only certainly I know it has been an inland sea once or twice or more before it rose for the last time. I talked to Melvin about watering the northwest side of the 30 acres at the forts in Johnson City so that the bluebonnet seeds would come up He said he would, and that was a big plus for me. But it only made more of a stab the headline that I saw when I got back, that there would be a cut of many millions of dollars in the highway building program. That's one of the hardest things a president ever has to do, a reduction of any jobs, any funds. Always personally hurts many people that he's close to and has reason to be grateful to. We rode back to the ranch in the setting sun and stopped at Oriole's to pick up Aunt Jessie and Oriole and Mamie and take them for a little ride through the Reagan to see the deer before it became quite dark. Back at the house, Jessie Hunter and Leela were waiting for us. We celebrated the day with some old fashions. Our Mary brought in one of the wild turkeys on a platter, looking brown and juicy, and then, at an early hour, went in the Thanksgiving dinner. Both our children and Pat, and a long table full of kinfolks. Rodney White had joined us at the last moment. The traditional dinner, this time three wild turkeys, Mary's delicious dressing, cranberry salad, sweet potatoes with marshmallows, other vegetables and hot rolls, finished off with ambrosia and angel food cake. I ate with complete recklessness and enjoyment. But the real spice of the occasion were the reminiscences. This rare quality of ringing from every fleeting moment, all it can give. Lyndon addressed himself to various ones around the board. He talked about the year of his life he had spent in Houston, teaching school, living with the Brights and Uncle George and Aunt Jessie. Mamie Allison had lived there, too. There were nine of them using the same bathroom, but they had no thought of being underprivileged. He talked about Uncle George's thriftiness and all his advice to him when he, Lyndon, used to blow a nickel every day for a dairy cream on his way home from school. Finally, when Uncle George was taking his long-awaited trip to Europe, after having spent a lifetime saving every dime to take care of his brothers and sisters and nieces, Lyndon came in and said, "Aunt Jessie, is Uncle George really in Europe?" "Yes. She just had a message from him. He'd arrived." "All right," said Lyndon. "I'm going down and spend all I want to on dairy creams." And then to Leela, he reminisced about her father-in-law, Uncle Clarence, who he said from the time he was 9 years old until he went off to college was a great influence in his life. It was a big event when he used to come to this house. In the summers, he would spend a lot of time here, and he used to ride with Uncle Clarence over every foot of these hills and pastures. Then we went in and saw some movies, one of them on his trip to Vietnam. In the course of this, he said in a very different, tough, and forceful tone, speaking of the Negro soldiers, "It's 11% of the population of this country are Negroes, and that 22% of the fighting men in Vietnam are Negroes. Remember that whenever you say, 'damn Negroes.'" He gave everybody gifts, Asian medals, pens, pictures. To Tommy, he was especially nice. And I think because he knew it would mean something to me. He congratulated him on his advancement, his move to Corpus. But he said, "You ought to be over there with us, helping run that business." So all in all, it was a great Thanksgiving day. So much to be thankful for. Lucy is happy. Linda is growing in beauty and the rich feeling of aliveness. And Lyndon has survived a rugged year, whose accomplishments I will be glad to measure against history. And also two operations, with all the good results you could hope for.